Welcome to Feels Like Healing, a series of conversations between myself, Al Lewis, and individuals who have turned to creativity as a way of helping them heal. Our need for healing is universal, however, the reasons behind it can be oh so varied. A difficult childhood, a traumatic experience, or perhaps a bereavement and our need to process grief. My search for healing stems from the death of my dad, who died when I was 21 from multiple sclerosis. I believe that hearing other people's stories can help us to process ours, and that the act of being creative can help turn something seemingly hopeless and incomprehensible into something beautiful and hopeful. These conversations are here to provide solace and inspiration, and to show you that healing can happen when we take our deepest pain and turn it into a work of art. This is Feels Like Healing. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's special live episode of Feels Like Healing, coming to you from Heads Above the Waves, a non-profit organization and physical shop which we are now in. It was started 10 years ago by Si Martin, who's sitting here with me tonight, Hannah Morgan and Griff Vaughan. They'd experienced self-harm firsthand in one form or another, and having been through it, they wanted to share their experiences and let others know that they weren't alone. So the mission of Heads Above the Waves is to help people deal with the root cause of their distress. And because self-harm affects people in so many different ways, Heads Above the Waves are helping people find unique and creative ways to deal with their distress. Si Martin, as well as spending his time creating what Heads Above the Wave does, is also a drummer in his band Junior. You can see some vinyl up there.
Shameless, isn't it?
And also for renowned Welsh act Novo Amor. So, hello, Si. How are you doing?
That's a better introduction than I've ever written for myself. So I'm just gonna
I'll give this
that
to you
section.
Later.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming onto the podcast. As I've just alluded to, your mantra, your ethos here, is to help people find unique and creative ways to heal following their distress, their trauma. So maybe we could go back in time and you could give us a bit of a backstory about why is it important to you. Am I right in saying it starts at school?
So I had a really nice childhood. I was really normal. I was maybe a little bit shy, but everything was kind of pretty fine. And then I got to high school and kind of hit this really rough patch of feeling really misunderstood, being bullied, and that kind of factoring into it as well. I think in general, just feeling like I couldn't ever really express myself. It ultimately culminated when I was in high school of me self-harming as a way to try and deal with that stress, with that frustration, with that anger, with that lack of expression. It basically got to a point where that was my kind of last resort coping mechanism. And ultimately that became my go-to coping mechanism. You know, that then became the thing. And it was a very difficult cycle as well of I felt bad, so I did this thing to try and feel better, which ultimately just made me feel bad.
Was it a very private thing? Was it something your friends and family were aware of?
It was something incredibly private. And I think deep down, really, I wanted people to notice because I wanted people to actually understand just how hurt I was feeling, right? But ultimately, yeah, I kept it hidden. I kept it a secret. Now here I am sitting in front of a room full of strangers and recording on a podcast being so here is what was once my deepest, darkest secret, you know? So that's a really strange journey to have gone on. But then also, to fast forward a little bit, when we first set Heads Up, I spoke to my parents and I was like, listen, guys, you know, I'm setting this thing up to support young people who self-harm. So I think it's only fair and in the spirit of that, that I tell you that it's something that I struggled with. And my parents were just like, oh yeah, we know. And I was like, what? And they were like, yeah, we knew, but we didn't know how to help. And that was really profound for me because that really, suddenly all those moments where my parents would come and sit, my dad would play video games with me, or my mum would put up with me explaining why Joey Jordison from Slipknot was the best drummer in the world. My mum doesn't care about Slipknot. God bless her, she would just sit there and listen to me and just let me talk. And at the time, that was really, it was a really powerful thing that they did in not knowing how to help, but just being there. Do you know what I mean? So that was a really eye-opening moment for me, I think, you know.
I think it's funny, isn't it, when we get to this age that I think we're both sort of mid-30s, where you
you can look back at things that your parents did that perhaps at the time you didn't know the intention or the purpose behind, but then you realize, actually, yeah, they were just trying to help in their own way.
And yeah,
it
exactly.
might have been flawed or it might have been misguided, but it was with good intention.
Exactly, man. Yeah. And I think, that, and again, you know, we're jumping ahead a little bit in the story now, I guess, but like we're currently now doing sessions for parents of young people who self-harm to basically try and be that voice box of young people who are struggling, but perhaps don't know how to tell their parents. So we can be that almost like translation service yeah. to take what young people are saying and actually present that to mm-hmm. parents. But then if anyone is a parent who's listening to this or engaging with this, like actually you 100% have the ability to support your child, or you know what I mean? You 100% have the ability to be there and be present, and you can't fix all their problems and you can't make all their problems go away, but you can 100% support them through it and help them find healthy ways to manage it and get through it.
And your healthy way was music.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So when did music, and in particular when did drumming come into your life?
When I was going around like open days for high schools, the one that I was looking around and I ended up in was they were like, oh, we also do drum lessons. And my parents were like, oh, would you like the sound of that? And I was like, yeah, I would. And I think maybe it's because I was a very quiet and quite shy child, but actually the opportunity to just make noise and like, and exist loudly in a productive way felt really kind of like appealing, you know, that felt cool.
The way to let out those things and those feelings by just physically hitting something.
100%. And like I came home from a particularly bad day, and rather than taking it out on myself like I usually would have done by that point, I decided to razz a drum kit. And again, like I'm able to, in hindsight, look back and say, it's because it was actually, I was feeling angry and frustrated in school, and this was a really good release for that. Is why it was a helpful thing in that moment. But at the time I knew it just felt better. Do you know what I mean? It was
yeah.
just the moment has passed. And in fact, the urge, even just as a distraction technique, the urge to self-harm had passed. Drumming is also wicked because particularly when you get into like more complex stuff, you have to be doing different things with your arms and legs. And that requires actually a level of either like deep concentration, or you go into this kind of like flow state, like it's which takes me out of my body almost yeah. and puts me in an entirely different space, which like I said, just as a distraction, that's keeping my hands busy, and it means that particularly low moment that I'm in can pass.
And did you notice at that time, did you make that connection that, oh yeah, I'm drumming more and I'm wanting to self-harm less? Did that
sort of, man? Yeah, yeah, sort of. And like, and it's an interesting thing as well, because I guess really it's a thing that you can build a bit of an identity around as well. And that I personally think that's a really important factor in like protecting people's mental health, is a strong sense of identity. And
for you that was pop punk, am I right?
Yeah,
Blink-182.
Oh dude, yeah, like discovering bands like Blink was a real kind of epiphany, I suppose, yeah. for me, you know. It was pop punk, really. It was Blink in those earlier years. It was Taking Back Sunday, those two bands in particular. That's something that's actually really stuck with me from discovering that music and feeling that connection of like, I've been there and I felt rubbish and I felt really bad, but I'm not sad anymore and I've got through it.
You found drumming, you found it to be a cathartic release. How did you then go about deciding that you wanted to do that for a living, and that you wanted to try and, yeah, pursue drumming as a career? Because it's not an easy thing to decide and to know how to navigate that.
No, for sure.
Being a creative person and the insecure nature of that industry.
Yeah. In high school, I didn't really have very many friends. And then someone heard me playing Stay Together for the Kids by Blink in a music room. And they were like, that's Blink-182. I was like, yes, it is. And then we ended up talking about music and becoming friends, and then we started a band, and then the kids who bullied me came to watch my band play. And then I remember being sat in an art class and one of the kids being like, oh, actually, we went to see Cy Martin's gig the other night, they were actually pretty good, yeah, oh, we'll leave them alone. And I was like, is that all it took? I was started that band years ago. And then I was kind of playing in bands, and they went on to become a band called Decade, who did very well for themselves. And I decided to go off to uni instead, rather than try and be in a touring band. And I was like, sat in uni in like thousands of pounds of debt, my squalor of my student house, watching my mates tour the world. And I was like, ah, man, should have done that.
Yeah, what do you think held you back from taking that step? Did you feel like you wanted that university experience, or?
Honestly, I think it was me being timid. I think
you wanted the security of a degree.
Yeah, legit, yeah, which is why I did music tech, which I don't have any security from. In uni, I met Ali, who is Novo Amore, but I never really properly spoke to him. And then when we graduated, we went to a house party, and he had like one EP out with two songs on it, and I was at a house party and he happened to be there. I got chatting to him and I was like, oh, I really like that EP, man, it's really good. He said, oh, thanks, I might need a drummer one day. And then that's basically all it was. Yeah. And it's been incredibly lucky for me that Novo Amore has gone on to do very well and has afforded me all these cool opportunities to tour the world, go and do cool stuff, play really big shows, and just have a wicked experience of touring, and I'm forever going to be grateful to Ali for that, for having me along for that ride, and long may it continue as well. Ali, if you're listening.
But if we go back then to that sort of pivotal moment after you graduate, am I right in saying that is sort of that precipice moment of 2013 when you came about having this idea with Hannah and Griff? So what was the decision making behind that, and what was it about that point in your life that made you decide to open up about everything and want to help other people?
Do you know what, I think really, so I'd left uni and I'd fallen into this ridiculous job. It was so good. It was this like project of like helping young people get into creative industries. It was really cool. But the thing is, it was like young people. I was 21 at the time and I was kind of like trying to steer all these people around like I knew what I was doing. I was like, I worked with two women on that project who were absolutely amazing, Jenny and Ling. One of the clients that we were working for within this company as well was a client called Unlimited, and they fund social enterprises. And I just got chatting really, and I was like, oh, you know, I don't even know why. We were on the tube in London, and I was having a conversation with Ling talking about like, yeah, how I'd had a really rubbish time and how music was really helpful for me and how I'd love to try and help other people play the drums. And she was like, oh, that would be a really cool thing to talk to Unlimited about. That we were going to make t-shirts for my band that said Pop Punk Saved My Life. We were going to sell those t-shirts. That was going to raise money that we were going to donate to Samaritans, because my sister gave me the number for Samaritans when I was at my lowest point. And I said, Samaritans don't want to speak to me. They don't care about my problems. I'm not important enough. And I'm kind of on a little bit of a vendetta and a mission to try and make sure no one else feels that way, because having worked with amazing people like Mind and Samaritans, Papyrus, like having met the people behind these organizations and these helplines, they are literally there for you, whatever you're facing. And that's such a powerful thing that I wish that someone had kind of explained to me in a really easy way. Put in this application for a couple hundred pounds from Unlimited, and they were like, oh, that sounds really cool. We'd fund you to start your own thing, not support an existing thing. So I kind of went, okay, we'll start a thing. And originally, and isn't this funny, like originally the thought was that, well, drums work for me, so drums will work for everyone. We can teach everybody to play the drums. That's how we're going to fix mental health. Heads Above the Waves was, I misheard, there's a Wonder Years song that starts with the line, Head Above Water This Year, Boys. And I thought it said Heads Above the Waves. And I was like, that's a really good name for a brand. We should do that. So that's kind of where it came from. And yeah, we had a Tumblr page. We had three t-shirt designs in it. There's a little red suitcase down by there somewhere.
Yeah.
Is there? Yeah. That was the original Heads Above the Waves shop. So we would take that to like gigs, events, anywhere that would have us. We'd rock up with that and we'd be like, can we sell some t-shirts? And then the t-shirts would fund printing some flyers with information and, you know, advice on them. And we'd give those out to people. And that was the thing.
Did you see that becoming what it has become today and being this shop and it being such a huge part of your life? Or did you see it more as a moment that would pass and you would just try this thing out? Or did you see it as your life's work today?
At the time, I was, what, 22, 23? I don't know if I thought about it that profoundly, to be honest. But having done a lot more soul searching in recent years, there's a guy called Simon Sinek talks about like find your why. And I've realized that basically my why, my purpose, my thing that kind of really drives most decisions that I make is that I don't want anybody to feel as rubbish as I've felt. I want someone else who's sat in 14, 15 year old size position to actually stumble on heads above the waves, be like, oh, here's some quirky guys with tattoos and piercings and some folks who actually have been where I've been and like they get it. And they're telling me that it's okay to call the Samaritans. They're telling me that it's okay to speak to Papyrus. They're telling me that actually I should be brave and I should go and talk about what I'm going through and I should try things that might help me cope a little bit better. That's the real kind of purpose is to try and make life better for other people, really.
What I found really helpful is to realize the commonality in a lot of what we feel like and the commonality in how we respond, even if our circumstances are different and the cause of our trauma might not resonate with somebody, but it's the commonality of seeking some sort of solace is what I think I've found interesting in doing this podcast and talking to different people. Have you found that in like the people you've come across in setting up Heads Above the Waves and going to schools, because I know you do a lot of school workshops as well. Is that seeing what kids are talking about and how they want to respond?
Yeah, I do. Well, so the other funny thing, you know, funny enough about the inception of Heads being something that was just kind of like, okay, I guess we'll do this. We had that Tumblr page for maybe a year, 18 months, before a group came to us in Caerphilly who ran drug and alcohol services. And they were like, we've got a lot of young people that we're working with who are struggling with self-harm, but we don't know how to help them. Can you come and join our school sessions and help us out? So we worked with, they were called DAYS at the time, Drug and Alcohol Youth Service. We worked with DAYS to develop this set of workshops, the very first incarnation of the workshops. And yeah, that's what kind of snowballed from there. But yeah, I think like you said, that kind of shared collective experience, and it's a really interesting one interacting with so many different people from so many different walks of life as well. Mm. Like I think having the shop has been really interesting because you never know who's going to walk through the door and like come in for a chat. Like,
and do you find people do come in here because they know the backstory of this place? Do you think they do come in here and perhaps maybe more likely to strike up a conversation with you than... Are you going in wanting people to open up?
Yeah, and again, I'm well aware that I spend all my time in a mental health sphere and like a little bubble where I'm like, of course it's okay to talk about mental health. I do it all the time. I'm sat in front of a bunch of strangers right now talking about what I went through as a teenager. And then I sometimes have to zoom out and be like, wait, that's not quite where everyone's not quite at that point on their journey yet. So you got to factor that in. But yeah, I definitely think that the mission with the shop has always been like the fact that we have this sofa that we're sat on right now, like this is always here. And like, really, it would have made a bit more sense to have had a bit more space for clothing in here to try and sell more products. But actually, I've always wanted with every iteration of the shop to have a space that people can come and sit down and just be and just come and chat. My whole mission for Heads is that I want people to feel better for having interacted with us, whatever that is. Whether you go to our website, whether you see one of our videos on like Instagram or TikTok, whether you come into the shop and have a chat with us, whether you've been to one of our school workshops, whatever it is, like I want you to come away feeling more uplifted and better for having interacted with Heads.
The creative element of what you do here is such a big part of you and a reflection of your personality. Do you feel like that creativity, creating the designs on the clothes, thinking about the layout of the shop, the workshops, how you're going to present, you present a lot of them, I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
You know, is that a big part for you of helping you from day to day in your, you know, with your mental health and just having that space to be creative?
Yeah, I think so. And it's funny, like I definitely am not the best graphic designer, but it really, there's something about, yeah, like you said, like the merch designs and actually even just thinking about that. Like I'm someone who, I really believe that what you wear can say an awful lot about you. I mentioned identity earlier, like part of the whole concept of Heads is that like, if I see someone in a Blink-182 t-shirt, I'm going to have a conversation with them about Blink. I'm going to be like, oh, have you heard that new record? Oh, what do you think of the new singles? Oh, did you see them at this festival? Oh, it was the best band I've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. And like in that moment, there's that shared commonality. And even if we have nothing else in common, the fact you're wearing a Blink t-shirt means that we get each other on some level.
Yeah.
And the hope with the Heads merch has always been, if you see someone else wearing Heads merch, or you know, if I see someone else wearing Heads merch, we have an understanding, a common level that it's okay to talk about mental health, and that that's a good conversation to have. And that every time that we do a merch drop, and every time that I open that box up and I hold that thing in my hands for the first time and I go, this is something that didn't exist the other day and it was in my head, and then now it was pixels on a screen and now here is a physical thing.
Is drumming and music still that catharsis, that place where you're not on the spotlight of Heads Above the Waves, you're not you know, on show advocating mental health, you're just doing music? Is that still that sweet spot?
Yeah, and even more so doing it for no reason, like not trying to commercialize it and not trying to make something, feeling like I have to go and write a song because I need to make money to do whatever. It's like I'm doing this because it's for me, and that's
creativity for creativity's sake.
Yeah, exactly. And dude, that is like so important. If you're making something that makes you stoked, then it's worth doing it, and that's valuable in and of itself. It doesn't, like, the value doesn't come from numbers and money. The value comes from the impact it has on you as a person. And I've had moments playing shows where maybe it's that, like, there's a song that triggers a particular memory, or that it's just something that I go, I'm gonna go all out on this, and it feels so cathartic, and it just feels better. And you talk about, like, when you exercise, you have like those kind of endorphins, and they talk about like a runner's high, don't they, as well, from when athletes are running. Like, I think it's a similar kind of thing for me. That's just, yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to give up in, you know, in some way, shape or form. I'm always going to use creativity as a way to pick myself up. Almost anything can be a healthy coping mechanism if you tell yourself that you're doing it for you and for your mind. Like, so I like to play drums, that's a really good thing, but there's sometimes when I do just have to practice because there's a gig coming up, or, you know, I'm playing drums because I'm being paid to play drums and we're kind of going through the motions of it, right? But then there's other times when I will catch myself feeling angry and feeling frustrated and feeling that kind of energy in my body, and I'll go, I'm gonna go in the garage, I'm gonna play drums for an hour. Nobody talk to me, everybody leave me alone, I'll leave my phone inside. Like, and that's doing the same action but having different outcomes because of the mindset that I'm going into it with. And I have the same thing with video games. I love playing video games. If I catch myself overthinking and I'm well aware that I'm getting anxious and stressed or whatever, I'll go and I'll switch myself off by playing a game for a couple hours. And again, same action, different mindset, different outcome. So yeah.
What have been the interesting creative ways that you've heard from other people being here talking to individuals through this organization? What have people come to you and have spoken about being their relief, their creative endeavors?
We've had a lot of really cool artists. One of the most interesting ones, and it's something that we've taken into our school workshops, actually. So there was a friend of ours called Becky who struggled with self-harm, and she was like arty and creative, but wanted to do it like, rather than drawing, she would just rip up magazines. And I was like, that is so cool, because it's something that's super duper accessible, and it's something that actually helps with that kind of anger and frustration in the moment as well, right? Like, particularly if you get like a big thick magazine and you're trying to tear a yellow pages.
Argos catalog. Like, yeah.
Argos catalog. I was like, that's such a cool way to kind of deal with that. And so we basically said to Becky, we're like, is it all right if we share this and do this in schools? And so a week today, I'm going to be sat in schools doing this session again with young people, being like, art doesn't have to be drawing. And again, art doesn't have to be doing it because you're doing an art class in school and you have to get a good grade in art. It's like, this is where I'm at right now. This is how I'm feeling. So that's a really, really powerful one. Really, really simple, but something that's come up is just writing stuff down in a few different forms. So someone came to us and they were like, they just write lists of everything. Particularly helpful if everything feels a little bit out of your control. If it just feels like stuff's happening around you, actually just keeping a list of everything. Super useful. And then just gratitude journaling as well. Like actually spending a little bit of time at the end of each day to write down three things that have been good about that day. We have to train our brains to also look for the positives and train our brains to actively look for good things that might help them. Packs. We send out resource packs to schools as well, is another cool thing that we're able to do thanks to people buying our merch. So we send out posters, flyers, leaflets, information, booklets and stuff. So if anyone is a teacher listening to this, anyone works with young people and you'd like a free resource pack, please email talk@hatw.co.uk and we'll send you a pack for free. It's as easy as that. Or
I'll put the links in the bio as well for your site.
You're a professional. You're a professional. I love it. But yes, one of the things that's on the wall there is actually five things that might help your mental health in school. And I'm cheating a little bit by giving you this as a final answer, but scribbling on a page. Dude, it's so simple, but literally, like, again, really handy if you're feeling maybe a little bit angry, or even if you're feeling a bit anxious and you've got that energy in your body, you need to do something with it. It's kind of hard to fill in a page with a biro, like just an A4 page or even an A5 page, like to actually like fully color that page.
You haven't met my daughters, clearly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's either a healthy coping mechanism or a good way to keep them quiet for 2 minutes. So yeah, but that's another really cool thing that I think a lot of the time people can sometimes feel like, oh, I don't have enough skills. I'm not talented enough to use creativity as a coping mechanism, or I'm just not a creative person. But actually, like, there's really small, really accessible, really simple things that literally anyone can do. I would encourage you to just try those like first little baby steps. If you're someone who's like, I'm not at all creative, you are, you just haven't found the right thing yet.
Because there are so many things that we take for granted, I think, in life, which is creative. Gardening, there is cooking. Things that we do every day take for granted, but gardening I find really therapeutic. I've got an allotment, and you're going there and seeing food grow, nurturing that. I think that's really creative, and I think that's a really good way of having your hands in soil. Apparently is a really calming thing, and it really helps your mental health. We've got somebody who cuts trees here. Am I right in saying that?
Definitely,
I just didn't want to ask the expert, rather than I was a, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
So, Si, to finish off, I just wanted to ask, you know, where, don't worry, I'm not going to ask for a 10-year plan from...
I'm not very good at sticking to them either, so don't worry.
2033, but yeah, what are your hopes for Heads Above the Waves and for mental health services in general, but for your services and your music? Where are you hoping that life leads you, apart from becoming a father, of course?
Fatherhood, yeah. Who knows where that's going to be? Well,
sleepless nights, that's where that'll
be. That's where it's going to be, isn't it? Yeah.
I can guarantee you that.
I'm away on tour in like China and Australia for the last month of my wife's pregnancy, and I fly home from Singapore on the due date, which is like another level of stress. That is so...
But why'd you do that to yourself?
My hope is that I'm still going to be in Australian time, so by the time I get back, like, the baby will be up all night, but so will I, because I'll be like, I don't know what time it is, you know what I mean? Yeah. So really, it's all going to work out fine. Everything's totally fine. Everything's fine. So yeah, 10 years time, or, you know, just the future of Heads. I think what I would love is for us to continue rolling out those school workshops. Like, I think that's a really valuable thing that we're able to offer people. And just to teach more people how to deliver those sessions, they're still able to continue even without me. And then, like I mentioned, I love with this shop space that people wander in because they maybe see a cool t-shirt in the window, and then that leads to a conversation around mental health. I love the thought of taking that a step further and actually having a space that is, you walk in and someone greets you at the door and says, hey, what are you here for? Are you here for shirts? Are you here for your mental health? Or do you want to have a coffee? But the idea being that you'd walk in and there's nice little cool clothes, the Heads merch everywhere, but then also a cafe space for people to come and work, have a nice hot drink.
Hot non-caffeinated drinks.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
And mental health discussion.
Do you know what I mean?
Sounds like a winner.
The vision is that we will have a space where you walk in, clothing, nice little cafe space, but then upstairs from that is like drop-in counselling, therapy sessions, space for us to run our workshops for people who aren't in education. Because at the moment, the limitation is that they're in schools, right? So the mission is to try and get to the point where that's accessible for everybody, and then have kind of office space above that as well that we can.
And maybe in the basement, like a music venue.
Well, again, yeah, genuinely, I love the idea.
You need a pretty big building, Si.
I was going to say, yeah. So if anyone happens to have like a spare,
a four story,
to ultimately make it so that it's accessible and welcoming and cool to want to come to these spaces around mental health, and in particular creativity in relation to mental health as well. Yeah. So that's what we will get to, and I'm speaking that into existence right now.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, I thank you for coming on the podcast and for talking to me and for inviting us into this beautiful space. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I commend you for all that you're doing with this nonprofit organization, and like you say, to make people feel like there's someone who's been there and come through it is such a powerful thing to do for somebody else. So, good luck with the future, mate.
Class. Take care. Thanks, Al. Cheers, man. Appreciate it. Cheers. Cheers.
For more information about Heads Above the Waves, visit their website, hatw.co.uk. Please help by rating and subscribing to this podcast, as it will help to spread the word about Feels Like Healing. Thanks for listening.